You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan Zgura and Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl. And Bria and Dog Pound, don't forget, we are exactly 1 week away from our first Browns preseason game. Be sure to tune into News Channel 5, the new TV home of the Cleveland Browns, to watch every Browns preseason game this season. Just heard from Scott Solomon. A lot's going to be placed on him. He was getting reps with the ones even before Barkevious Mingo's injury. Now with the injury, he's going to get more. And we're also going to see a lot more of rookie Nate Orchard. Now, I want to go into something he said about Nate Orchard. Said he has heavy hands. What does that mean to you as a player, and what does that mean to our listeners?
Heavy hands, the best way to say it, I'll put it in football terms here in a minute, but you know how you walk up to someone and you go, dude, that dude's got some mitts on him. You know what I mean? When you shake hands with somebody, they either have, you know, big hands, heavy hands, fat fingers, or that really big grip. That's what he's talking about and how it's able to be used when it comes to football. Because especially as a pass rusher, where a defensive back would not want to have heavy hands, you know, because you want to be, you know, quick and decisive with your jams and get off and not create that tangle-up situation with a wide receiver. You want to be able to throw those. When you do your pass rush, when you want to chop, you want that chop to be, you know, of substance, of power. And when you have, you know, when you throw a chop, you want it to be used. And or when you throw your club, that club really feels like you're throwing like a baseball bat at him instead of just kind of like going through the motions. And what he meant was the heavy hands, when thrown, there's power behind it. You know, there's a big thickness, you know, in his arms or hands.
Yeah.
So literally, when you throw a club, it feels like a club or a bat. When he throws a chop, it feels like you're chopping with an axe and not just going through the motions and like, you know, you're chopping yourself on your arm, but you're like, you're knocking those hands down. And just his effectiveness as a pass rusher, using his heavy hands as an advantage.
He talked about getting to work against Joe Thomas, getting to work against, you know, Mitchell Schwartz, good tackles in the league. Obviously, Joe Thomas, one of the very best. How much can that accelerate the development of a Scott Solomon or of a Nate Orchard?
A ton. Especially if Scott Solomon, he may or may not be this comfortable yet here in Cleveland with his relationship with a guy like Joe Thomas. But what I would do, or when he really proves his value maybe throughout this preseason, to have the audacity to go up to Joe and go, hey, dude, like, when I do this to you, or remember that rep yesterday when I got you, or you stuck me, or and walk through the scenarios, what counter, you know, who's the best at doing a lot of what he does? Or which player do you play against that's the most like me? And what can I do to kind of like catapult myself to the next level? So it's those, and it's conversation, doesn't necessarily have to be a walkthrough, but conversations with, well, when I'm playing against, for example, you know, I'm talking Joe Thomas, is like, when we played the Giants in 2007 and Jason Pierre-Paul hit me with this move, you know, I just started stabbing him in his chest and then he countered me with another, you know, whatever move, a spin, a cross face, you know, an inside club move, whatever it is, and just give Scott Solomon a thought process of a top-notch pass rusher in the National Football League. So Scott then starts to apply what he learned from Joe verbally into the 20-minute individual periods, and then Scott can start to experiment in practice, even against
with
the Scout,
these things.
With those things, yes, to just build his repertoire. Because, a lot of pass rushers, there are those that are just so gifted that they can get away with, you know, speed and speed and speed, but eventually they're going to take your speed away. You got to have a counter move. And the best pass rushers in the league, the Michael Strahans, the Reggie Whites, the Dwight Freeneys, the Robert Mathises of the National Football League, Jared Allen, you know, the guys that have had 100-plus sacks in their NFL career, have probably a repertoire of four moves. They have their one that is their go-to, but they have three complements off of it because you have to. Because the tackles get so good and they sit on those moves, and you need to have that second move like clockwork, you know, ready to throw.
And we've seen in practice a lot of kind of that dialogue between the secondary and the receivers.
Mm-hmm.
Does that
That's exactly
it,
what I'm talking
is
about?
Is it common to? I haven't seen a whole lot of it from the linemen and the rushers. They seem to stay very separate.
Well, offensive defensive line, and you asked the question, and Scott didn't go into a great deal, but I'm sure there's not a lot of love lost, you know,
they're
between
beating
the offensive
each other up pretty
at
good.
This point right now. They're beating each other up. I believe that the offensive line, maybe not the first group, but as we heard from Mitchell Schwartz yesterday, they're learning the terminology. They're growing their relationship with their line mates. They're growing in comfortability with the play calls, you know, in flip system with Josh McCown, with the running backs and who likes what. all that is kind of like that, you know, yet to be determined type of world. And that's what these practices are for. We'll see that tomorrow with the scrimmage, a little bit more definitive of what Flip likes to call. But that whole, the growing pains of what this offense is still going on. And the offensive linemen aren't yet comfortable with what they do enough to volunteer information to the defense to truly help them.
I think that that's a good point. And it's an interesting one because it is such more of a physical thing. Like the corners aren't beating up on the receivers and vice versa, really. They're going through the, not going through the motions, but in run blocking, nobody's really punishing anybody in the blocking. So it is a different dynamic there. How much more valuable, when I look at the scrimmage, what I love about it is you move the ball like real football. You actually have real third down situations. Because when you go through your drills and yeah, it's a third down situation, you know, but they do four plays, you know, you're getting four third down plays. In the scrimmage, it's going to be like football.
Yeah.
How much more valuable is that for the sense of pressure, for the sense of what you're trying to do, get in certain situations, than when you script those situations in a practice?
Very valuable. And one other key point in tomorrow's scrimmage, and I don't necessarily know, I would think it would happen, but it's coaches on the sideline. It's just like a game. So the communication from, you know, flipping the box, you know, down to Josh McCown, or flipping the box down to whoever's going to call that play into Josh, and evaluate it as if it were a game. As I mentioned the other day, you know, Dante Whitner, you know, yelling out hints from on the field to Justin Gilbert about his alignment in certain situations like that. It's no, dude. It's you need to know where to line up. You need to know the proper technique to play pre-snap. You're playing a football game. And that's why you have these scrimmage. That's why I think that, you know, the scrimmages up in Rochester versus the Bills will be great.
It's huge.
It's going to be... Not only again, you're going to get to do it against someone else, which will make it feel different, a lot like the scrimmage is going to be in a different setting. It'll just feel different. It'll naturally bring out the competitor in you. For those fighting for their roster spots, they're going to want to show out. Because, and the question that I asked to Coach Pettine is, how do you evaluate the preseason games and the scrimmages, you know, of value compared to a practice? The practice is the grind, the scrimmage, and the preseason games are the showcase. Yeah. Ultimately, to make the decision... In that big, you know, funky ball of wax, whatever, you know, that pulls out 53 bodies that become the Cleveland Browns for 2015.
And I think it matters to them. You know, practices are very, very important. But at the end of the day, they want to know who does it when the lights are on bright, because the lights are going to be on bright every single Sunday in the National Football League. And you've got to be able to deliver under that kind of pressure.
Absolutely. And again, I'm not trying to shine a negative light by any means. But if you look at a guy like Justin Gilbert, you know, there weren't many questions surrounding what type of player he was last year throughout training camp. But once he had the opportunity to go out in the games, he didn't perform. And that's the evaluation process. You know, how can you give them, as coaches give, as many opportunities in practice and as much information as possible for these young men to process? And then they have 16 opportunities, well, four in the preseason and then 16 in the regular season, to put that into action to show their value for a contract, for a job, for a rise or fall on the depth chart, whatever it might be. They're given those opportunities. It's what they do with it. And as Ray Farmer alluded to yesterday, the more competitors that you add into the mix makes it more difficult to create a 53-man roster, makes you a better football team.
It certainly does. And, you know, you can't recreate that pressure in practice. They try, and that's why he has the jersey competition, try to put some pressure on people. Today's jersey competition was certainly more fun with the kicking. I feel like I could 20-yard field goal?
You'd be surprised.
I've done it out here before on these fields with Ray. And
the pressure of your
everybody
teammates, you know, all wearing the white or camo jerseys.
It's certainly not natural.
No, gosh, no.
It's certainly not natural.
And if you look at the cleats of an offensive or defensive lineman, you know, and I know there may be some defensive linemen that are trying to get away with, you know, looking a little bit cooler, but the offensive linemen are like these big clawed hopping shoes, trying to kick field goal. I mean, look at Danny Shelton's legs, for gosh sakes,
oh my,
you know, and then you look at, you know, Travis Kuhn's legs and you notice there's like both of his legs together are one of Danny Shelton's, and he's supposed to try to put a football through the uprights.
I wanted Danny Shelton to make his so bad. I just thought it would have been great. Joe Thomas started for the offense. I believe it was Xavier Cooper was the first one for the defense. It was funny. So once Alex Mack made it, the defense had an opportunity to tie it, to match. And they went with Phil Taylor. And Joe Hayden was standing on the goalpost. He's like, Phil Taylor's legs are already crooked. We need somebody whose feet can go straight at the goalpost.
I said this about Phil Taylor walking off the practice field. It hurts me to watch him walk.
He's got an interesting gait.
He does have an interesting gait. So it's just funny to me that they went to him in the
clutch. Well, they'd already been, they were running out of people. They were already 0 for 7 on the D-line.
Okay.
So they were down to, you know, 8 guys.
Sure. All right.
I don't know if Ishmaili Kitchen got an opportunity.
I would have took Kitch over Phil Taylor.
I think that was the sentiment from Tremont Williams and Joe Hayden as well. I think they would have gone with anybody else at that point over Phil Taylor. But that is how the offense won the camouflage jerseys. Curious to see if they will be wearing those camouflage jerseys tomorrow. For those of you who are expecting to see the full uniforms, it's a scrimmage. It's practice. They're going to be in their practice uniforms tomorrow.
Sure.
Down there in Columbus.
A week from today, you'll see their new uniforms.
Hopefully. The NFL, if Nike can get it together, they better.
They have to.
216.
They're here in the building right now.
216-578-0850. Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Call us up right now. Hour number two coming your way. We'll have the head coach, Mike Pettine, his press conference at 2 o'clock. We'll have the roundtable with Andrew Gribble and, of course, Mr. Kevin Jones at 2:15. And then Adam Kaplan, ESPN NFL insider, who had some nice observations. Practice got to spend some time with him out there watching today's practice. He will be with us as well at 2:30. So a lot to get to there. All right, let's go through, Dino. Let's cue up the music. Top three takeaways from today's practice.
Number three,
and Matt Wilhelm, we will start with you.
Number three is you cannot make the club in the tub, and you must be healthy to compete. And I think the frustration that the head coach exuded a few days ago at the podium is kind of trickling down now into some of the position coaches simply by not having the playmakers, the guys that they've spent all spring with, the guys that they've had conversations with, the guys that they're messaging about their goals for each other. They're not seeing out on the practice field. They're not healthy. It doesn't look like the Cleveland Browns, you know. And I know that every NFL team has to go through these, you know, the training camp and surviving these injuries. But I just said, you know, if you get the right guy to come in here and compete and be your next Scott Solomon, you put Barkevious Mingo on watch, or he starts the season on PUP and he's gone. He's gone for 8 weeks. You know, Terrence West. Look at, you know, Sean Drones got a heck of an opportunity. Zay Crowell, heck of an opportunity to seize West and Duke Johnson. Duke Johnson, you want to see your players
in Boston,
take advantage of it.
In Boston, he's known as Duke Johnson.
Duke Johnson.
No, you're right, and it's something that you got to do. You got to step up, and you're seeing it. Receiver guys are stepping up. Brian Hartline, another great day today. My number three takeaway will be, though, just the fact that if a game comes down to it, the Browns better not have a lineman kicking a field goal or an extra point, because it was scary. There wasn't anybody even close. They went 0 for 13.
These are 20-yard field goals or from the 20?
They were kicked. No, because there
like
aren't those goalposts.
It was like
on
an old extra point.
Those goalposts aren't on the backfield, so they were about on the, I want to say, the 10. So they're kicking. Maybe they're on the 5, and they were kicking. So it'd be 15 to the back of that end zone, but then it was like the little space and then the other end
right.
zone.
Right, so about 20.
Yeah. Phil Taylor, though, back in, and somebody pointed out, they did this last year as well, and Phil Taylor, Joe Thomas, they all hit. Everybody was hitting, but they were extra points.
Ah.
The distance, people were going hard left, though. Hard left. Some of these were not even close. All right, number two, Matt Wilhelm.
Number two.
My number two takeaway from today's practice, and a lot like Johnny Manziel, and you referenced him as a part of your first takeaway, is Brian Hartline is living up to the bill of why the Cleveland Browns sought him out and why Brian Hartline wanted to play for the Cleveland Browns. Heck of an opportunity to be a 1A, 1B wide receiver for this football team. He runs great routes. He works hard. He's healthy, which we referenced a few days ago that he finally is, you know, coming out of spring with those foot problems or toe problems. But he is developing that trust between first-year Cleveland Browns quarterback Josh McCown and first-year wide receiver. They're figuring it out in the absence of Dwayne Bowe, and he's a guy that's seizing the opportunity because of an injury. He's getting the lead in many of those 3 and 2 wide receiver sets.
He is, and he's having success against Joe Hayden, and you could tell at one point today it was getting to Joe, so he's doing it against very good competition.
The best. And
the best competition, and he's been looking pretty good so far. So, yes, I would agree with you there. My number two takeaway right now from today's edition of training camp is that this team is going to need a pass rusher off of the edge, because you watch practice today. There were a few times when they would get pressure from one side. You need it off both sides, and you've been talking about it as a key for
yes.
this team. get pressure on one side, but the quarterback's able to roll out the other side, and they complete passes and make plays. You need to be able to contain him in the middle of the pocket, and you need that pass rush to come off both sides. Scott Solomon, Nate Orchard are going to get the opportunities to do that opposite Paul Kruger starting tomorrow, and I want to see what they can do.
Number one.
My number one takeaway after a day like today where you mentioned the offensive linemen and defensive linemen were kicking field goals essentially to wear the camo jerseys when only a day ago it was a goal line stand to where the uniforms is. These guys are having fun. They're enjoying being the Cleveland Browns. The grind is not truly the grind, and the coach is noticing when to let up, inject a little bit of fun, and that's what I love seeing out of Coach Patton. So, you had, and I referenced this in Scott Solomon's interview. Andrew Hawkins sat in the same chair and said, business. What's one word when you think of Mike Patton? Business. Business. But yet you can have a day like today, only 24, less than, you know, a little bit more than 24 hours away from a very important scrimmage that's going to be very unique from an evaluation standpoint down at the Horseshoe for his, you know, for this, for the Cleveland Browns year. But yet you have a fun day like today where guys get to laugh. You heard the crowd. The Browns fans were into it. The players were into it. And the reception that Coach Patton is getting of knowing and feeling what his team is and where they're at in regards to camp is that open line of communication between locker room and coach. It's alive.
It is alive, and it is very well. And these guys like playing for Mike Patton. I think that is very, very clear. My number one takeaway today, Johnny Manziel's continued improvement, looking like an NFL quarterback, making reads from the pocket, delivering the football with strength and accuracy into tight windows, throwing a tight spiral, making good decisions, going through progressions. He had a touchdown to Sean Drone where he started off looking at the middle of the field, came to the right looking for a slant, and then realized that Drone had flared out and nobody had gone with him. Easy pitch and catch for a touchdown. He had another touchdown to Shane Wynn, I'm sorry. And he just looks very good throwing the football right now. So, again, Johnny Manziel's progress, I think, again, the number one takeaway, because it's something you want to see. I'm not creating a controversy. I'm not blowing smoke. You'll hear from Adam Kaplan. He saw him here today. He was very impressed with what he saw from Johnny Manziel out there on the field. That's my number one takeaway. When we come back, the head coach of your Cleveland Browns, Mike Patton, will give you his thoughts after day 7 of Cleveland Browns training camp when we return on ESPN 850 WKNR.